This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. This week we've been focusing on the part-time soldiers who make up about a third of the troops now serving in Iraq. As part of NPR's series The Span of War, we've featured stories on the readiness of National Guard and reserve units for war. David McGinnis thinks the National Guard was not built for this war. He's a defense analyst at the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington.
The Army went to war about 40,000 people short, based on faces and spaces and units. It was designed that way. The National Guard was short people in their units, and the Army Reserve was short people in their units, because the premise was that when we went to war, we would have access to the individual ready reserve. They're a pool of individuals who have served a certain degree but still have an obligation or have volunteered to be placed in that pool and be available if a serious event occurs.
So the fact that regular forces and guard forces are being used far more than they might have expected, and
Right. Certainly
more than many are happy with.
We're putting stress on a force that we're using a force in a way it wasn't intended. There's a real ignorance, even within the professional military, about how to mobilize and use reserve forces.
Over the course of this week, we've heard the voices of a number of people in the National Guard, in and out of the National Guard. One of them is a first lieutenant, Paul Rykoff, who was an Iraq War veteran who's now the head of an organization trying to call attention to problems in the National Guard, and he spoke about training.
I've been in the National Guard since 1998, and I can't ever remember having enough ammunition for a training exercise. We always had to beg, borrow, and steal to get ammunition.
When this force was built, the intent of the Army was almost all of the fighting would be done by the active force. The Guard would be used minimally, and the Army was reluctant to spend readiness money training the National Guard and equipping the National Guard organizations, especially the combat organizations, the kind the lieutenant was in. Much of the delay in getting the Guard units mobilized and deployed over there came about as a result of a large undercapitalization of the Guard and Reserve in the 1990s. My estimate is it's well over $60 billion in modernized equipment that they really needed to do their job.
That didn't get bought. What signs are there, if any, that the Army is going to lose more of these volunteers than it can afford to lose, experienced soldiers?
There's no indication of that right now. The attrition rate, both in the active Guard and Reserve, doesn't appear to be significantly different from what it was in the last decade. Part of the explanation for this, and this is also maybe more significant in the Guard and Reserve, is that people not only bond to their fellow soldiers, but they bond to the organization when they go into combat.
People have a very intense experience in Iraq, you think, that will bind them to the service to some degree.
It binds them to the service, but most important, it binds them to their unit. They will feel that they did something very, very important, and they'll want to stay part of that.
Does that mean that we don't have to worry as much about some of the problems that have been described this week when it comes to families that don't have enough money or soldiers that don't have enough training?
No, because a lot of what happened shouldn't have happened. The biggest economic penalty in this mobilization has been paid by the self-employed. And this ranges from doctors with very productive practices all the way down to plumbers and craftsmen who are self-employed.
Let's listen to the wife of a Guard member who was self-employed. We heard from her earlier this week, and that family's financial situation completely changed after he went to Iraq. This is Christy Eicholtz.
I was left here to take care of all the bills, taking care of the kids, the house. I dealt with the bill collectors for his shop. I dealt with people who also hadn't paid us yet. I had a complete emotional breakdown. I was done.
I mean, we knew these problems. We went through this in the first Gulf War. We created the Committee for Employer Support to the Guard and Reserve back in the 1970s when I was a recruiting officer. People said it's not worth the investment because we're probably not going to use these forces.
You're saying that relatively early in the war it was recognized that there was going to be this problem with the National Guard, but it should have been anticipated a year before, 2 years before, 5 years before.
A decade before. It was learned a decade before, and in the Gulf War, the first Gulf War didn't go long enough to become a big enough political fireball to get anything to happen.
That's David McGinnis, a senior associate at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, helping us to wrap up our series for now on the National Guard. Previous National Guard reports are at npr.org. And this series was produced by Marisa Peñalosa and Deborah Schifrin.